Welcome to yet another episode of GarageCast, coming to you live from AIM Expo in Las Vegas, Nevada. Tony Gonzalez, Sam Dantzler.
Tell you what, buddy. Yo. I tell you, before we introduce our guests, we need to come up with a name for these. Like GarageCast Shorts or something like that. We've done enough of these that we should come up with a name. Briefs? Should we call them Briefs? GarageCast
Power
Briefs.
Shots.
Power shots.
There you go, Brent. Right in on it.
GarageCast Power Shots. There we go.
I do like that. Power Shots.
Legal. Let's get that copywritten before he gets out of the seat. So here comes your next Power Shot.
We're going to do our best to get new thinking out there. There's going to be discussions centered around growth and new thinking.
That's where those great ideas come from. Exploring them together.
Nuggets that you can go back and put into your dealership that'll help you make more money.
This is GarageCast.
Brent Jaritza.
Jaritza.
Jaritza. Now, if you look at how it's spelled to how it's pronounced, man, I was looking at it like, good Lord.
Hungarian.
Hungarian.
Yeah. And that Jaritza. Jaritza, that's the American pronunciation. I have Hungarians correct me all the time.
What is it?
Let's hear it. It's more like a Jaritza. See, I always make it sound Italian, though. So we'll just stay with Jaritza. We'll say it American style.
Yeah, you're the owner of Maverick Motorsports. You have three locations up in Montana. Yeah,
we do. How awesome is that?
Fantastic.
Three locations in Montana.
Montana. It really stinks being up in Montana. Don't move up there.
Yeah, stay away. That's what we say to don't move to Montana, Colorado. Californians go to Texas. Texans go to Florida. Florida, go back to New York.
Anyway. That's right.
Listen, you got a lot of irons in the fire just beyond the Maverick deal. So let's talk about some of the stuff that you're passionate about and that you've been talking about lately, which is culture within the dealership, culture with the staff.
Sure.
Let's go. Talk to me.
Boy, I tell you what. I mean, we did have that panel discussion the other day, and I think culture, of course, is one of the most important things to keep a dealership from feeling just like you're going to Walmart.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of that going on right now. People say, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but I hear a lot of people talking about to go in some of these growing large franchise dealerships, and they feel like they're going into Walmart. There's lack of knowledge. There's lack of enthusiasm. And I think one of the things that we're trying to do and maintain is a culture of, number one, a love of motorsports.
Yes.
And number two, just a friendship, a camaraderie amongst our staff. And that's a tough thing to build because we're all kind of, thus our name, Mavericks. So to speak, you know, we kind of are all our go our own way kind of people, and to try and get all these single-minded, do it alone people to come together is sometimes tough.
You were up there. You said the panel review. You mean at the AIM Expo, you were actually on stage. The MIC had tasked you or given you the nod to get on stage and talk about not only employee retention, but culture. So let's take that back a second. You talked about a culture, a love for the product and a love for the friendship and camaraderie comes with it, which I love. What's step one to getting people to buy off on the culture? Is that something that you tell them about in the job interview? Like, if this isn't important to you, then take a step backwards, or where does it fit?
Well, I think one of the things that I brought up yesterday was it goes back to the hiring process. And they were asking, how are you attracting employees? And I think there's always people that are out there that want to be hired. There's people that always think it'd be really fun to work in a motorsports store. And then after they do it for a little while, they realize it doesn't pay nearly as well as other places, and it's still work. I think one of the things that we've done and done well is finding people that are passionate, don't necessarily want to work in motorsports, and we've actively recruited them kind of into our Maverick family because we felt like they would be a good fit. And that has actually been some of our longest standing, and some of our most successful employees have been employees that we actually recruited that were not looking to be part of the family.
Interesting. And so to that vein, is when you're going out there and recruiting people, is there any specific mechanism that's working for you well in Montana that is better than others? Is it that you really put a ton in the top to get a few out the bottom?
Number one, we never focus on income or salary. We're really looking for just a personality. And those personalities can be diverse. We're not looking for, you know, I think one of the things I did maybe early on is I looked for a bunch of me's, and I just realized, boy, it sucks working with a bunch of me's. You know, you need to round that out. So I think it's we've tried to not make it about money. We've tried to not make it about people just being like me, but it's just been finding people that fit well together, and they have a passion for motorsports, and they also have a good work ethic. I mean, because without the work ethic, it doesn't work.
How do you test them on the work ethic before you hire them to see that they have no work ethic?
You know, I think, and I shared this the other day, one of my favorite hires was a guy. He came in, he was working for Aaron's Furniture, and he stopped in on his way back from collecting furniture. He had to repossess some furniture, and I thought, well, holy crap, you know.
furniture. That is dangerous.
I was like, that? Yeah, I think it was like, you know, in a kind of a, I mean, not that Montana is a lot of dangerous areas, but it was not an area that I would want to go to and repossess furniture. And I was like, well, that's got to take a little bit of gumption.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know what you can say on the podcast or not, but
balls is what you could
say. That's what I wanted to say. I was like, that takes some balls. And I said, how'd that go? And he talked about it. I was like, holy crap, man. If you can repossess furniture, you know, I guess you could probably sell a motorcycle. I was like, have you ever thought about being in motorcycle sales? He's like, no, I've never thought about it at all. And I was like,
safer.
Yeah. I said, you think you'd like to give it a try? And he said, man, I think I'd love to give it a try. We sat down. We talked right there. He gave us 2 weeks' notice that day.
Wow.
He's been with us. He's one of our highest paid employees right now. He's our top selling salesperson. And it all just came from a guy stopping by on lunch break, wanted to look at motorcycles.
That's cool. I love that.
That is cool. So you talk about culture being one of the retention methods. Let's go a little deeper down that rabbit hole. Once you find these people, it looks like you got a template for how to find them and bring them in. Other than culture, how do you retain them? Because there's a lot of turnover in this industry.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, I think particularly in the last 2 years, techs have been the hardest to retain.
You hear that from every dealer right now. Techs are like worth their weight in gold.
We've got RV dealers that are willing to pay six figures just flat plus bonuses just to have them switch over.
Wow.
I didn't realize immediately how big of a problem it was until my son came to me. He's like, hey, the RV dealership is offering me this much money to come work for him.
God. He's like, leave your son.
I was like, I don't want to leave, but you know, I mean, that's a lot of money.
I don't want to leave, Dad, but
pay the man.
It's a tough thing. But we have had people leave and we've had them come back because I think once they realize they're not part of family, and again, that goes back to that culture. If you're building a culture, that's something you want to stick around for. And that's the thing that you got to keep striving for. I think the other thing we've done that's a little unique is build some special incentive-based programs. I'm real big about home ownership. So we've put, I think, 5-6 employees. We've helped them get into their first house. So we set aside money that only is there for them if they go or if they want to purchase a first-time house. And we'll walk them through the process. I help them out with that. And then vacations. A lot of times, guys, it doesn't matter how much money they make. And I tell them all the time. You know, it doesn't matter how much money you make. You can always spend all the money you make. So we also set aside money for some vacation funds and just sent one of my staff guys, him and his whole family, for a week down in Hawaii. And we get a lot of excitement. I mean, people appreciate, I think, thinking outside of the box.
That's the key.
That's
what you just said. Is that
sounds like Dave Bofill.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Dave Bofill. I know there's some other dealers that are touching on stuff like that, which is, you know, a lot of times if all we have to offer are hours for you to come in and trade your hours of life for pay, that's all you're going to get is pay for an employee. I think when you start putting things in front of an employee like, hey, Sam, you probably have never thought about buying a house. You probably don't even think you can buy a house. Let me educate you and let's start saving money so you can buy your first house, or let's start putting money away so you can take that vacation. That's next level stuff that people just may not think is possible at your place of employment.
Yeah.
Until you educate them.
Right.
So I love that.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. So tell me, what do you got going in 2024? What do you think is going to happen? Where's the industry going the next year? Talk to me.
Wow. It's a little complex. I'm not going to lie and say I'm not a little bit afraid. We're still trying to just reduce flooring interest from all of the product that finally got delivered.
There it is again.
And we got absolutely jammed, absolutely stuffed. And we paid more in 23 in flooring interest than in the prior 4 years. So this isn't a COVID problem. I mean, it is kind of a COVID problem, but we paid more in flooring interest last year than in the prior 4 years combined. Absolutely ate our lunch, stopped us from doing a lot of the expansion we wanted to.
To be fair, was this product that you knowingly took on because you were anticipating a big winner and you got anything but so far?
So we, no, yes and no. We did have some manufacturers that accidentally dropped off machines.
Whoopsie dooders.
Didn't belong to us and then promised to work with us and make sure they got moved. Still sitting there. And then we definitely had some manufacturers that delivered product that they 100% said had been canceled because they weren't deliverable, but all of a sudden production ramped up and they're like, oh no, we never canceled those orders. So, you know, we had a little bit of like, oh, that was a misship. And we had a little bit of like, oh, we didn't actually cancel that order. And then we had stuff that, of course, because we wanted everything we could get, you got used to ordering and then asking for additional allocation. And then all of a sudden they got product. And guess what?
You got both. You
know, after 24 months of not getting anything, you got everything you asked for and then some. So it just was a unexpected landslide. But I think with that in mind, 24 is exciting. A lot of great product coming out. I think there's going to be a big uptick in back into motorcycles where it has been primarily an ATV and side-by-side realm. Yep. We're just already seeing such a huge interest in the motorcycle level. And I think with the smaller displacement bikes, I think we're opening up to a larger audience. And so I feel like that's a good decision by a lot of the manufacturers. Seems like I remember talking about this back in a 20 club years ago, that there should be more small displacement bikes. I even remember talking to some of the manufacturers. I think I even remember talking to one manufacturer in particular, and they were like, no, we're never going to do that. There's no market for it.
That was 2016, buddy. We were sitting in that meeting.
2016. And here all of a sudden, everyone's like, oh, no, we always planned on doing these small displacement bikes. So anyway, I think it's great. I think it was what we needed to do. So there's some good product out there.
That's good. Hey, so outside of the flooring issues, which we seem to, everybody's just getting punched in the face with that right now. What's the one thing we should be talking about that we're not as an industry?
It's something we've been talking about. I don't know that it's not, we haven't been talking about it. How do we get more female riders? How do we get more riders in general? But the biggest segment of untapped riders are female riders. How do we get more female riders? I think that's a question MIC should be asking, MSF should be asking. I think it's a question that the Dealer Advisory Council for MIC should be asking. I think it belongs, it's a question every single one of us should be asking.
Yeah.
Why are there not more females riding bikes?
Well, I tell you what, we did one of these, what do we call these? Power podcast? Power?
What'd you call it? Power shot.
Power shots.
Power shots. That's my copyright.
We did a power shot with Pat Huss out of the bicycle industry. And what we know in the bicycle industry, there's an organization called People for Bikes. And they talk about one of the things they look at is why people didn't buy. They walked into a store and they didn't buy. So they're polling people who showed interest, submitted a lead, and then ultimately didn't buy. And the number one answer is, don't know where to ride. I don't know where I can safely take this bicycle and actually go for a ride in this particular town. I can't help but think that doesn't dovetail into our industry. And we, dudes, we're idiots. We'll just get on a bike and point it one direction, figure it out, right? I think women want to know where they're going to go. Where's the map? Where's the destination? But I think at some point when you make it like, here are the trails, here's what you can expect on this particular trail, and then here's kind of your waypoints, if you will. I think we need to make it easier for them to enjoy the experience while they're out there and not try to have to figure it out. Like maybe we think it's exciting for us, maybe not exciting for them.
A lot of questions to answer on that one for sure.
Yeah.
But that's a really good take because you don't hear that come out of people's mouths a lot.
I do think we should talk about culture, and that's culture of riders as men.
Yep.
How do we act towards female riders? And I mean, I just hear a lot of stories from female riders of the male culture and how they just don't feel a part. So, I mean, I think that's something we all need to focus on, particularly dealers. We need to figure out how do we change that culture or make it a culture that feels very welcoming to women.
Yeah.
Love it. Hey, man, Brent, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Tony.
Hope you have a great show. Yeah.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Sam,
good
Tony,
to see you.
You guys are the best. Appreciate it. Sending a GM down to one of your GM training here. So I appreciate all the stuff you guys do is
we'll
for
beat
the industry.
Up well for you.
That's absolutely true. For Brent and Sam, this is Tony with a power shot.
Power shots.
We'll see you soon.